Today is Friday, July 16th, 2021. On this day in 1976, a group of criminals made their move to rob a bank in Nice in one of the largest, most elaborate heists of the 20th century. Welcome to Today in True Crime, a Spotify original from Parcast. Due to the graphic nature of these crimes, listener discretion is advised. We advise extreme caution for children under 13. Today, we're covering the robbery of the Société Générale in Nice, France. The crime shocked the world and came to be known as the heist of the century. Now, let's go back to July 16th, 1976, to a tunnel deep in the sewers. By the time the bank closed that Friday night, the crew had plenty to be proud of. Around 20 men toiled for weeks to complete the passage. Half of them were mobsters, while the other half were friends with one of the masterminds. The results were impressive: a 30-foot tunnel from the sewers to the wall of the vault. It was just wide enough for a grown man to crawl through. The work hadn't been easy. Tools had to be floated into the sewers on rafts from the underground Payon River. A half mile of wiring was threaded through the sewers and rigged to a parking lot light fixture to power their tools. The tunnel needed to fit more than men as well. 2 tons of equipment needed to pass through, so reinforcements and ventilation shafts had to be built into the structure. It took 2 months altogether to finish the job. The men had to work mostly at night and block off the tunnel entrance every morning. But eventually, their preparations paid off. They reached the wall of the vault, 18 inches of reinforced concrete. As Friday night turned to Saturday morning, the thieves chiseled through the barrier. The timing had to be meticulously planned. They'd enter the vault as the bank closed for the weekend, but for the first time, they hit a major snag. Finally emerging through the wall and into the vault, the team found they'd aimed their tunnel at the worst possible spot. An armored cabinet storing valuables blocked their path into the room. They shoved as hard as they could against the massive metal structure, but it wouldn't budge. It weighed almost 5 tons. Luckily, they'd floated so many tools into the tunnel that it was only a momentary setback, but a dangerous one. The team positioned a pneumatic jack against the cabinet. It could move the beast, but it would also make an incredible amount of noise. If anyone was still inside the bank, their heist would surely be discovered. There was no other choice. The criminals gritted their teeth and turned on the jack. With a screech, it pushed the heavy cabinet onto the ground and enabled the men to enter the vault. They'd done it. Now it was time to collect the spoils. The heist started on July 16th, but lasted all weekend. First, the thieves brought in welders and 27 tanks of acetylene as fuel. They welded the vault door shut before anything else. They wouldn't be interrupted. As the weekend passed, they loaded cash into bags and took them away. They used their welders to break into safety deposit boxes and rummage through the valuables inside. Anything that could be easily spent or traded was sent through the tunnel. Anything trackable was scattered on the floor. The thieves didn't feel too pressed for time during the robbery. If anything, it was a party. The hard work had been creating the tunnel. They cooked and ate hot meals inside the vault. They knew no one could find them until Monday at the earliest, so they took it slow and enjoyed themselves. By the time Monday arrived, the work was finished. The criminals left traceable jewelry, documents, and bonds, and their empty acetylene tanks scattered around the vault. Some of the large silver heirlooms they found had been used as chamber pots. The secret tunnel was left visible and prominent as well, as there was no reason to disguise how they'd gotten in once they were gone. At the last minute, they decided not to take a sack of pearl necklaces, worried they too could be tracked. Someone left behind a brick of cash, not noticing since they'd already grabbed so much loot. On the wall, they scrawled a peace sign and a message in French. Translated, the graffiti read, without weapons, without violence, without hate. A clear signal to law enforcement that their crime was one only of property. No one had been hurt, and no one had to be. It took a second for the bank employees to realize what had happened on Monday morning. The vault wouldn't open, but the door had gotten stuck before. As workers tried to get inside and realized the metal had been welded shut, panic started to build. Citizens, hearing about the bank's inability to retrieve their money and valuables, flocked to the building. Law enforcement followed soon, afraid of what they'd find inside. When they finally got the vault open, they found chaos. The room was a mess. The message on the wall was infuriating, and the police knew they had their work cut out for them. All told, the robbers had taken 46 million francs worth of valuables, worth about $35 million at the time. Adjusted for inflation, that's over $150 million today. None of it was ever recovered. Coming up, the police's quest for the mastermind becomes as wild as the heist itself. Hi, it's Vanessa from Parcast, and I'm here to tell you about my new 10-episode limited series, Obituaries. They're some of the most iconic figures of all time, celebrated in death for their individual achievements and impact on society. But in life, the relationships they kept tell a different story, one of unexpected connections that yielded extraordinary change. Every Wednesday on Obituaries, join my co-host Carter and me as we explore the shared legacies of prolific pairs from the past. From the mutual traumas of entertainers Marilyn Monroe and Ella Fitzgerald, to the unlikely admiration between visionaries Mark Twain and Nikola Tesla, each episode of Obituaries digs deep into the lasting impressions made between two legendary figures and how their entanglements changed the course of history. These meaningful duos may have passed on, but the profound effect they had on each other and us will live on forever. Follow the Spotify original from Parcast, Obituaries. Listen free only on Spotify. Now back to the story. On July 16, 1976, as many as 20 men pulled off a weekend-long bank heist in Nice, France. By the time the theft was discovered on Monday, the men were long gone with their 46 million franc haul. As the police tried to make sense of what had happened, the public went crazy. It was one of the biggest crimes in history and had happened like something straight from a movie. It became known as the heist of the century, and while the world scrambled for juicy details, French police focused on finding those responsible. They could tell the job required a large team and focused on finding the mastermind who'd organized the operation. Detectives did have a couple of leads right away. An officer had recently stopped a known criminal and found chisels in his trunk. It was strange, but not illegal. Now it seemed like a sign of something greater. Still, following the clues brought them no closer to the mastermind. Some low-level arrests were made, but no names were given up. The police assumed with a crime this carefully planned, the mastermind would be someone high up in organized crime. Despite this, when they finally closed in on a suspect, it was someone completely new to the French mob, a photographer named Albert Spajari. We don't know what prompted the police to look into him, but when they discovered Spajari's past involvement with political terrorism, they became convinced he was their man. It explained why he'd left the message of peace inside the vault. Spajari eventually confessed, telling police how he'd worked with the local mob to get the job done. He had a safety deposit box in the very vault he burgled, and the idea came to him one day out of the blue while inside. He claimed he donated his share of the money to political causes. Confession in hand, French authorities prepared to take him to trial, but the mastermind had a few more tricks up his sleeve. In March 1977, he escaped a magistrate's office by complaining about the heat. He walked over to open the window, and before those assembled knew what was happening, jumped out. He landed on a car 9 feet below and got away on a waiting motorcycle. He was never caught and died 12 years later. It seemed for years that the case was closed. Spajari was convicted in absentia, and no further organizers were discovered. But in 2010, a new wrinkle emerged. A detailed book about the crime was published under a pen name. The author positioned himself as the true organizer behind the crime. Police started digging and quickly learned the writer was known mafia member Jacques Cassandri. The mob connection always seemed inevitable, and police moved to arrest the man. Cassandri admitted to his involvement in the theft, but denied being the brains behind it. He felt safe in doing so because the statute of limitations had already run out. He claimed to have only received the equivalent of 2 million euros from the crime, which were long gone. Still, prosecutors took him to trial, not for the theft, but for money laundering and fraud. Those crimes had no statute of limitation. During the proceedings, Cassandri claimed the book was a work of fiction. This defense worked on the jury, especially lacking other evidence tying the gangster to the crime. He was acquitted of the worst charges, though he did serve 30 months in prison for a variety of smaller-scale offenses. The theft in Nice remains a rare, real-world example of the elaborate crimes we see in heist films. It's even inspired some of those stories, including 2008's The Easy Way. It seems only fitting that a crime so elaborate and unusual has such a strange fallout. Though many faced financial losses, it's thrilling to hear about such a wild heist committed without weapons, without violence, and without hate. Thanks for listening to Today in True Crime. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Today in True Crime is a Spotify original from Parcast. You can find more episodes of Today in True Crime and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify. We'll be back with a brand new episode tomorrow in True Crime. Today in True Crime is a Spotify original from Parcast. It is executive produced by Max Cutler, sound designed by Paul Libeskind, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Trent Williamson, Carly Madden, and Bruce Kitovich. This episode of Today in True Crime was written by John McDonough, with writing assistance by Terrell Wells, and fact-checking by Cheyenne Lopez. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Hi, it's Vanessa from Parcast. If you enjoy our in-depth profiles on historical figures and famous fates, you'll love my new limited series, Obituaries. Every Wednesday on Spotify, join me and my co-host Carter as we explore the unlikely bonds forged between two meaningful figures from the past and discover how those relationships impacted the future. Follow the Spotify original from Parcast, Obituaries. Listen weekly, free, and only on Spotify.